Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 30, entitled The Gopi Search for Krishna, text number 5. Trishto va kacharashvata Plakshanya grota no mana Nanda sunugato hritva Premaha savalokanai. Has been seen. Va. Vayu. Kachchit. Weather. Ashvata. Oh, Ashvata. Holy fig tree. Plaksha. Oh, Plaksha. Weed leaf fig tree. Nyagrodha. Oh, Nyagrodha. Banyan tree. Na. Our. Manaha. Minds. Nanda. O Maharaj Nanda. Sunha. Say it again. Sunu. The sun. Gata. Has gone away. Tiritva. After stealing. Prema. Loving. Hasa. With his smiles. Avalokanai. And glasses. Translation purport by Svangre Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation, the gopi said, O Ashvata tree, O Plaksha, O Nyagrodha, have you seen Krishna? That son of Nanda Maharaj has gone away after stealing our minds with his loving smiles and glances. Okay, so please repeat. The gopi said, O Ashvata tree, O Plaksha, O Nyagrodha, have you seen Krishna? That son of Nanda Maharaj has gone away after stealing our minds with his loving smiles and glances. There's no purport, so we'll go on to text number 6. O Kurabaka tree, O Ashoka, O Naga, Banaga, and Champaka, as Balaram's younger brother, whose smiles removes the audacity of all proud women, passed this way. Short purport. As soon as the gopis saw that a particular tree would not answer them, they impatiently left it and rushed off to another to make further inquiries. Text 7. O most kind Tulasi, to whom the feet of Govinda are so dear. Have you seen that infallible one walk by, wearing you and encircled by swarms of bees? Purport. The acharyas explain here that the word charana is a term of respect, as in the expression evamvadyantacharya charanaha. The bees humming around the garland worn by Sri Govinda were attracted by the fragrance of the Tulasi Manjaris offered to him. The gopis felt that the trees had not replied because they were male, but that Tulsi, being female, would sympathize with their plight. Text 8. O Malati, O Malika, O Jati, and Yutika, has Madhava gone by here, giving you pleasure with the touch of his hand? Purport. When even Tulasi herself did not answer the gopis, they approached the fragrant jasmine flowers. The gopis, seeing the jasmine vines humbly bowing down, assumed that these plants must have seen Lord Krishna and were therefore showing humility in their ecstasy. And we'll finish off the text 9 today. O Chuta, O Priyada, O Panasa, Asana, and Govidara. O Jambu, O Arka, O Bilva, Bakula, and Amra, O Kadamba, and Nipa, and all your other plants and trees living by the banks of the Yamuna, have dedicated your very existence to the welfare of others, We gopis have lost our minds, so please tell us where Krishna has gone. Purport. According to Sri Jiva Goswami, the Chutra is a mango creeper, whereas the Amara is a mango tree. He goes on to explain that the Nipa, though not a very prominent tree, bears large flowers, and that the gopis' desperation to find Krishna is clearly shown by the fact that they have approached the insignificant arka plant. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti gives the following information about Vrindavan's trees. The Nipa is the dust kadamba, and it has large flowers. The kadamba proper has smaller flowers and a very pleasant fragrance. The Govindara is a particular kind of Kanchanara, mountain ebony tree. Even though the arka plant is very insignificant, it always grows near Lord Gopeshvara, the Shiva deity of the Shiva deity in Vrindavan Forest, because it is very dear to him. Omiganat Vrandasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshumratam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Shtapitam Yen Putere Svayam Rupa Karamayam Tarati Svaparantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Vam Hare Vam Ram Ram Hare Hare. Grab me if I go get it. So, in this chapter, after the Rasa Dance, in the arena of the Rasa Dance, Krishna has left the gopis all of a sudden, and now the gopis are distraught and trying to find where Krishna is. And so, first of all, they're going around looking in various parts of the Vrindavan forest, and they're speaking with various non-moving and moving entities. So I just read all of the verses today of the gopis asking all the various trees and creepers, you know, where Krishna is. So, being asked to give the class today, I thought, well, this is a good chance for me to stay awake for once in Bhagavatam class. Very good way. But also, I was a bit apprehensive at first, actually just looking at these verses, because they're a very high subject matter. They're all about the gopis' absorption in Krishna and Krishna consciousness, and yeah, the gopis' absorption in Krishna, it's a very high level, it's the highest level of devotional service. And then so I had a read of the Krishna book, and it was all exactly the same thing, just describing the gopis' absorption. So I thought, well, although I can't personally speak much about the gopis' feelings and their high ecstatic emotions towards Krishna, thought that this, what's being portrayed here in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, is just how the gopis are so absorbed in Krishna, and how we also need to one day increase our absorption in devotional service. For example, we're always absorbed in something. It's just the nature of the mind just to be absorbed in things. For example, everyday things like sports, people, they've got these sports they like to play, they've got their politics that they're into, various political parties, family members, boyfriends, girlfriends. People have always got something to absorb themselves about. And particularly these days, especially with modern technology, you've got internet, you've got games, PlayStations, Xboxes, etc. These things are actually extremely absorbing, because it's using all facets of your senses. The power of sight, all these games are just like fully absorbing you, just, and then just the sound, through all the sounds of the video games, and then just because you actually have to play the game itself. So these things are just so absorbing, and I'm sure as you've seen, you go on Sankirtan in the city, or if you just have to do something, you walk past these gaming parlors and you see some guy playing away on one of these drum machines, and then you go by, and then a couple of hours you walk back to catch a tram and get into the car, and then you see the same guy just still playing away on his drum or playing the Street Fighter or whatever they play these days. So it's an extremely absorbing activity, and it's having quite detrimental effects actually on people. For example, their attention span is, for some reason they can focus their attention for 2 or 3 hours straight on these computer games, but then you put them in a school classroom, but because there's no bright lights or flashing vibrating sound, and they just, you know, they just fall asleep. So we have to become aware of how people are becoming absorbed in modern day society, because as Christian conscious practitioners, we actually have to try and encourage these people to take up Christian consciousness. We have to be very aware of what these people are actually going through and what their conditioning is, because it's very different to the conditioning which people were, well, same general conditioning which people had, you know, in the 70s, but it's a bit different as well, the way that people are becoming conditioned. So this Christian consciousness is a process by which we can train our mind to become absorbed in the right things. So instead of becoming absorbed in all these video games and the opposite sex and sports and all these other things, we actually train our minds to become absorbed in Krishna. This is the thing, this is why it's a reawakening process. Naturally we are Christian conscious and we are absorbed in Krishna, but we've actually done a pretty good job of making ourselves not absorbed in Krishna. So now we have to retrain ourselves again, relearn to walk again in a Christian conscious fashion. Now yesterday this lady, she brought up an interesting question, which was, we're in this world and then all these things are going on, but how do I operate in this world and not become attached to these things? So she was asking, how do I become detached? And the way that she was asking was like, you know, how do I physically or, you know, mentally detach myself? And so an interesting verse from the Bhagavad Gita is, Tato hyapi kuntaya purushasya vipashita indriyani pramati ni hiranti pasabhamana, that the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavouring to control them. So you see these yogis who are out there and somehow or other trying to practice yoga in this Western society, and they're trying to be detached from these things. They're working in this world, but they're just forcibly just trying to block things out. For example, in Buddhism, Dharmaraja Swami, he was speaking with a master Buddhist practitioner in Asia somewhere, Thailand I think it was, and this Buddhist was saying that anyone who thinks they can practice Buddhism in the West is just completely illusioned. Basically, you have to get yourself away from everything, seclude yourself, and then just focus on controlling the mind. It's a forceful process of trying to physically detach yourself. So it's very impossible. It's actually impossible to do that in the West. But the beauty of Christian consciousness, Gangeshwar Guru, he brought up this point. He said, Vishyavani Bharatanti, Nida Harasa Dehina Rasavajam Rasopyasya Paradrishta Navarantate, that the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, although the taste for those sense objects still remains. So you can try and detach yourself from these things, but the fact is, if the taste is still there, that ain't going to do much for you. You're going to crave it again. You're going to want to absorb yourself in those activities again. But through experiencing, but from ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste is fixed in consciousness. And this here is the secret to this Christian conscious movement. This is the secret of our practice. We've spent so many lifetimes absorbing ourselves in the wrong things. And now it's time for us to absorb our thing, absorb our consciousness in the right thing, which is Krishna and his pastimes and his devotees, etc. So the process of Christian consciousness is such a blissful, nectarian experience that it's actually very easy not to absorb yourself in these things as long as you're practicing properly. And as Gangeshwar Prabhu said, it's not that we wake up in the morning, we chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna thinking, you know, this is not good for me, I'm not going to think of that person, I'm not going to think of this activity. No, just Krishna, no, Krishna. It's not like that. It's a very simple process. We just focus upon Krishna, and because Krishna, he's a reservoir of all pleasure, then naturally we're attracted to them. These things we give up. We don't actually have to forcibly detach ourselves. Just 1 minute, I'll just turn this off just in case. So A good example is you've been driving a Mini your whole life, and then you get given a Mercedes. That transition period, like someone says, which one do you want to drive? It's obvious that you'd want to drive a Mercedes because it's such a nice car. But what you need to see is that it's not that you have to convince yourself, okay, well, I don't need the Mini anymore, I don't need the Mini. No, it's quite easy. You just go straight over to the thing with a higher taste, which is the better car or the better thing. Question of consciousness is not the process where you have to forcibly kind of detach yourself from these things. So by engaging our mind in Christian conscious activities, we can give up our attachment for mundane things and absorb ourselves in things of a higher nature, which are Christian conscious activities. So an interesting verse about this is, I'm kind of on the platform where I like to hear, you know, this we're not the body kind of philosophy, this Gopi kind of stuff these discussions with the Gopis is very advanced. So if I would read this nice verse from Bhagavad Gita, Machita Makatapana Bodhayata Parasparam Katasa of Kanta Kayatan Katayantas Chamamnityan Sushanti Charamanticha. Now here, Krishna says that the thoughts of my devotees dwell in me, their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss by always enlightening one another and conversing about me. The purport is, pure devotees, whose characteristics are mentioned here, engage yourselves fully in transcendental loving service of the Lord. Their minds cannot be diverted from the lotus feet of Krishna. Their talks are solely on the transcendental subjects. The symptoms of the pure devotees are described in this verse specifically. Devotees of the Supreme Lord are 24 hours daily engaged in glorifying the qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Their hearts and souls are constantly submerged in Krishna, and they take pleasure in discussing him with other devotees. So the reason why I like this verse is because I was reading it and then I thought, this here is exactly what's described here in the Bhagavatam. If we look at the activities that the gopis are doing, this here is what they're 24 hours constantly engaged in thinking and talking about Krishna. That's where their thoughts are. They're completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And the beauty of it is that it's all here in the Bhagavad Gita. And the beauty of the Bhagavatam is that we get to see how the Bhagavad Gita is put into practice by these advanced devotees. Here we get the instruction, and here we see practical application. Goes on to say that in the preliminary stage of devotional service, they relish the transcendental pleasure from the service itself, and in the mature stage, they're actually situated in love with God. Once situated in that transcendental position, they can relish the highest perfection which is exhibited by the Lord in his abode. Lord Chaitanya likens transcendental devotional service to the sowing of a seed in the heart of the living entity. There are innumerable living entities travelling throughout the different planets of the universe, and out of them there are a few who are fortunate enough to meet a pure devotee and get the chance to understand devotional service. This devotional service is just like a seed, and if it is sown in the heart of a living entity, and if he goes on hearing and chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, that seed fructifies, just as the seed of a tree fructifies with regular watering. The spiritual plant of devotional service gradually grows and grows until it penetrates the covering of the material universe and enters into the Brahman Yogi effulgence in the spiritual sky. In the spiritual sky also, that plant grows more and more till it reaches the highest planet, which is called Goloka Vrindavan, the supreme planet of Krishna. Ultimately, the plant takes shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna and rests there. Gradually, as the plant grows fruits and flowers, that plant of devotional service also produces fruits, and the watering process in the form of chanting and hearing goes on. So, here it is described how through when one chants Hare Krishna, or the process of devotional service, it's like implanted in our heart like a seed, and then through cultivation of that through proper hearing and chanting, then we become more advanced, more purified, and gradually our heart takes shelter in Goloka Vrindavan, well, in the spiritual world. So, but what's emphasized here is how it takes this Bhakti Lata Bij, or this creeper of devotional service within our heart, needs to be regularly cultivated. Not only that, but we also need to weed it as well, because you might water a plant, but then you're also watering the weeds at the same time. So you have to remove those weeds, and then you have to encourage this devotional creeper to grow through hearing and chanting. We need to immerse ourselves 24 hours a day in Krishna Katha, in the service of Krishna. At the moment, we chant for a few hours in the morning, we chant our rounds, but even when we're chanting our rounds, we have to kind of, at the end of it or during it, you know, once in a while, think, okay, well, how's that round? How did that go? How attentive was it? And then just a general analysis at the end of it, well, how good were my rounds today? I mean, how was I actually Krishna conscious? Was I just rendering lip service? For example, you could just chant, and this is what I've been trying to do lately, is I'm kind of chanting and then I'll kind of just like fade away somewhere, be thinking about something else, and I have to bring myself back and then chant, be focusing nicely, then I'll go away. So, you know, there might be a 2-hour chanting session, but we may only be Krishna conscious for maybe half that time, or if you have a good day, you might even be able to get more. So this area is, we have to try and be Krishna conscious in reading Prabhupada's books, focusing upon that, absorbing ourselves in Krishna Katha, and then we are absorbing our mind in all this Krishna Leela, hearing the holy names, and then when you meet the devotees, then that's what you want to speak about. You want to speak about these things. So you speak with the devotees, how are you going? Speak about your service, what's going on with your service, what have you been doing, what have you been, how many books, what about the prasadam, what about your puja, I mean, how's it going? Speaking about these activities. We've been conditioned to not speaking about Krishna, so it's only natural for us to not want to speak of Krishna if we're not practicing properly. So this here is our, like a litmus test, analysing the association of the devotees, seeing how much is it absorbed in Krishna Katha, or things, you know, relating to our service. And then we might see, okay, well, you know, there's a bit of prajalpa there, and then we have to keep an eye on that. We have to make sure that we don't increase it. Try and chip away at that. That's why it's so important to have a very good service regime and to engage nicely in devotional service, have a very good solid service program. But not only that, but also to make sure that while we're doing our service, we have to make sure that we have the proper mentality and focus too. Otherwise, because if you're doing a good steady amount of service, and then you're doing it in a good service attitude, then it's very beneficial for your consciousness, because you're basically absorbing yourself in the service. I'm doing the service, I'm doing it for the devotees, I'm doing it for Krishna, and then when you're speaking with the devotees, associating with them, then you want to speak about the service in a positive way. Yes, this was good, we did this, we did that, that was very nice, or I've got these plans, I want to do this, I want to do that, this here is what I want to do for this project, whatever. And it's all positive. If you don't do the service in the right attitude, then when you speak with the devotees, then you speak in a negative way. You don't actually speak in a way which is encouraging the service. You speak in a way which is kind of putting the service down, putting the devotees down. So that's why it's very important that we associate with devotees with a positive service attitude, good service attitude, then that rubs off on us. Then we do our service in a nice way. Then when it comes time to speaking about all these services, then we speak in a positive way. So we can see there's this big carry-on effect. And an interesting thing is that, which I've been getting some realization lately, is we don't actually realize how materially absorbed we are a lot of the time. It was after my first year of practicing, and then I came over here to Melbourne, and then I was practicing for a while, and then I was kind of reminiscing about back in Wellington, where I first started in my university days and all the rest of it. And I think I was like walking down Swanson Street, and I was just like realizing that, you know, I'm just walking down Swanson Street, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. I'm here, I'm going down to a stationery shop or Crossways or wherever it was I was going to, that's all I'm here to do. Then I thought back of what I used to do. Like, I'd be in town, I'd be going to a certain place, but I'd be looking at lots of things along the way. You know, you'd be lusting over the opposite sex, you'd be walking past the shops, seeing, I want that, I want this. I'd be looking at people cruising past in their suits, getting into their BMWs, thinking, yeah, I'll be doing that in about 10 years' time once I'm set up. I'm thinking about these kind of things. But then, year down the track, I was looking back and I was thinking, gosh, even just after such a short period of time, there's like such a difference in consciousness, because the activities are what you perform, and you're trying to do it for devotional service, and you're trying not to do it for your own benefit. So you can see that there's just such a different kind of absorption. And each year, like Brujanpur was giving a class, and he was saying, each year I just look back at myself and think, gosh, what a rascal I was. Each day I look back, the previous day, thinking, my goodness, how contaminated I was. And I was thinking about that too, and I was doing the same thing, just looking back, thinking, my goodness, just see the difference in consciousness. But still, we still don't really realise how material absorbed we are, because each year all these different anadas are coming up and all the rest of it. So, but it's an exciting process, because as we can see these anadas coming up, we know, okay, we're making some advancement, we're actually getting somewhere. We're trying to absorb ourselves more in Krishna, which means that we're not getting so absorbed in all these other things. Give you some purity, then you can actually see, you can start to see where you used to be absorbed and see how distasteful and horrible it actually was. Good examples of absorption are, some of you may have heard the big Maha lecture which Radhanath Swami gave about the tribute to His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami, and they're very close friends. And I was listening to it while I was chopping salads one day at Gopal's. And Radhanath Swami was saying how they would meet sometimes in Washington or wherever it was, and they would deeply absorb themselves in Krishna Katha. This was like before he was bedridden in Gedanagari. But basically they'd come over and they'd both get up, they'd go for the morning program, and then they'd take prasadam together, and then they'd be speaking Krishna Katha. And then afterwards, the servants would go away, they'd wash up, and they'd speak Krishna Katha. Then they'd go for a walk, speak Krishna Katha, come back, take their meal, speak Krishna Katha, wash up, speak Krishna Katha, and then put their mats down, because they both slept on the floor, so put their mats down, and then they'd lie down, and then they'd speak Krishna Katha. And then they forget what the time was, then the alarms would go off to, go for Mangalarti. So they hadn't slept, so they'd just get up, shower up, and then go for Mangalarti, and then do the same thing again. This year is complete absorption in Krishna consciousness. And even when we think about times when we've had some really intense service, like either during a marathon, or depending on the department, what you do, the various departments, they have certain intensities, like for a Janmashtami, it's intense for everybody, but in particularly in the puja department, in the cooking department, or for the book distribution marathon, that's an intense time. All services are intense, but we have certain periods where we, push ourselves a bit more. We just think back to those times and how much we were pushing ourselves in devotional service and how absorbing it was, and then how whenever we're speaking to devotees, all we're speaking about was, oh, okay, what are you doing today? I'm doing this service and that service. Just, we can reflect upon these things and see how absorbed we were in devotional service. The classic case of absorption example is of the Brahmana who, he was very poor, but he wanted to, do some service, and so he did Manasa Seva. He basically performed service to a deity and to Krishna in his mind. So he got gold in his mind, he'd meditate, he'd get golden pots and get the water from all the various sacred rivers, and he'd bathe bathe Krishna with that water, and then he'd cook him nice preparations, offer it to him, and he'd do puja and all the rest of it. And so one day he was doing that, and then he thought that the sweet rice was too hot, and so he got his finger and he put it into the sweet rice to test it. This is, he was absorbed in the service in his mind, and it was too hot, and he burned his finger and then broke out of his meditation, actually burned his finger. And just from this service, although he wasn't actually doing any physical service, Krishna, or Lord Vishnu, he accepted that service and he sent the chariot down to come and pick it up. So here we see how there's various kinds of absorption and devotional service that we can do. I like to read of a funny pastime from Rama, from the Radha Damodara Vilas, of some devotees who are absorbing themselves in some service in a special kind of way. The devotees, they went on a Harinam, and this is, you know, pioneering days. They went on a Harinam into this particular town which wasn't so favourable. So this is from Kaladri speaking. We were at a shopping mall and the manager came out, and it was almost a fist fight. He almost took a swing at Ketananda Swami, so there was almost a big fight right in the parking lot. He called the police and we got thrown in jail, Narada Muni. Unbeknownst to us, they had arrested the Kirtan party for disturbing the peace. Apparently the police were scouring the area to see if there were any more Hare Krishnas around. And they found us in a mall and took us to jail too. This is just the main text. The devotees who have been arrested sit in jail feeling gloomy. It's Sunday, so they are all lamenting that they will miss the Sunday feast. They don't know what to do. There is nothing to eat, nothing to drink, and they refuse to accept anything offered by the police. Someone mentions having read that the deity can appear in stone, in wood, in paint, and also in the mind. Ketananda Swami recalls the story of the Brahmana who offered sweet rice within his mind, and he had actually burned his finger when testing to see if it was hot enough. Another devotee remembers Prabhupada saying that if you perform an activity within your mind, even if you don't actually do it, you still get the benefit. Let's cook a Sunday feast in our mind and offer it to Radha Damodara, someone says. We can have Tulsi Puja and a Nadi for Radha Damodara before the feast is served out, someone else suggests. So in this cell, everyone decides to cook the Sunday feast. Before long, the whole Sunday program is agreed on, with everyone talking excitedly about the preparations they want to cook. Without delay, they get busy washing all the veggies, cutting them up, and bringing them to the stoves for cooking. Everything is acted out almost like a charade. The guards watching the devotees think that this is getting weirder and weirder. Kaladri. We cooked a feast for Radha Damodara in our minds, and everybody was talking about their preps. It was pretty transcendental. We described how we dressed the deities, what they were cooking, and how they were cooking. We did the whole Sunday feast in our minds. Narada Muni. That was a wonderful experience, because I was Pujari. We cooked up a big feast, and I did the offering. When we started Kirtan, that drove the cops absolutely crazy. After Kirtan, all the devotees sit down in a row and Shuddha Kirti serves out the feast. As they enjoy the prasadam, Kirtananda Maharaj comments, "This is the only feast I've ever had where every prep has turned out perfectly and there is plenty for everyone. We even have something left over for the guards." The guards are agog, shaven heads and robes, and now they're actually eating this imaginary food. At this point, Shuddha Kirti comes over to offer prasadam to the guards. Would you like a plate? Meanwhile, the devotees looking after Radha Damodara on the bus are concerned that nobody has returned for the Sunday feast. So that there is a good example of absorption and devotional service. In contrast to, we sit down and we daydream about things. I want this, I want that, I'd like to do this, I'd like to do that. Materially speaking. So here we can see so many ways in which devotees can absorb themselves in devotional service. To sum it up, here we have the highest philosophy, and it's all mentioned here in the Bhagavad Gita. We don't have to get all esoteric, it's all very straightforward, all written, presented here in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna actually says, Manmana Bhava Madhbhakta Madhyaji Manmasguru Mame Vashiti Satyam Te Pratyavaya Navijate Pratyajana Pyosime. He says, always think of me Become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. So it's very simple. We just have to absorb ourselves in thoughts of Krishna. Absorb ourselves in Krishna's service. This here is what the gopis are doing here. But we actually see this here is the results of being completely absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. They're just maddened, as described yesterday, that they're maddened woman, but completely maddened just because of their complete love and devotion for Krishna. Krishna is gone. It's people under favour. They're separated from Krishna. They're in just so much anxiety. They just want to be with him and serve him again. So they're maddened. And now they're running around the forest, speaking to all the various trees. Hey, have you seen Krishna? Whereabouts is Krishna? So they're completely maddened. The Bhagavad Gita is so wonderful because it gives us access, it gives us the process by which these higher realms of devotional service are possible. We read this in the Bhagavad Gita, and I read about all these ecstatic symptoms which the gopis are displaying, and then I was thinking, how am I going to speak on this subject matter? It's just, I can't speak about these things. It's just like so high and it's so elevated. But their absorption in devotional service, their absorption in Krishna, that is something to speak about. And it's all instructed to us here in the Bhagavad Gita. The process is so accessible. We may not be running around, running around the plum tree outside saying, have you seen Krishna? Have you seen Radha Vallabha? We may not be like that. But we can absorb ourselves through a good service attitude, through good service, through good sadhana, through steady practice, through good relations with the devotees, just always trying to do our service better, because we're conditioned souls, so we're going to do things wrong. But if we have the focus of, okay, I'm just going to keep on trying to do all my service better, then we can spend the rest of our lives doing good service. There's always something which can be done better. There's always. That's the aspect of cooking that I like. My focus whenever I cook is to always try and cook it better. Always try and make sure that the chickpeas are just that perfect soft consistency, make sure that the curd is chopped properly, fried properly, or just mixed nicely in the sub, you're not broken up. It's a very good service for always trying to do it better, making sure that the kitchen is nice and clean and cleaner, there's always something which can be cleaned nicely. So we can absorb ourselves and our service by just trying to do it better. We're limited in our capacity. We can't always do things perfectly, but we can always do it better. And if we keep that focus, we can absorb ourselves more in devotional service, following this process mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, and that will actually give us access to be able to reach these higher levels of devotional service. Okay, so we'll stop there. We'll see if anybody has any comments or questions. Yes. Well, for example, okay, so the question was, I mentioned that devotional service is not an artificial process in which we, forcibly detach ourselves from these, from various things. And I also mentioned that devotional service, we have a creek which we water through hearing and chanting and all the rest of it. And so, but through watering that creeper, weeds also come up. So, which we need to get rid of those weeds, we need to rip them out. So it seems somewhat contradictory, we shouldn't be, that, we don't need to forcibly detach ourselves from these things, yet these things, they do need to get removed. So, let's just be introspective then, and look at things like Gangeshwar Prabhu. Let's look at the gross things first. For example, Gangeshwar Prabhu was speaking yesterday about gross things such as meat eating. You have good prasadam, you don't have to forcibly say, I don't want that meat anymore. I mean, you know, just after a while, naturally, you just have a high taste for a vegetarian meal, and then so then that's fine. And then we look at so the gross things, we can kind of see it like that. Then if you look at the subtle things such as, I mean, like for example, here's an example which I was referring to, which was attraction for the opposite sex. Now that's there, and to various degrees and various devotees. And but I found that just through chanting Hare Krishna and through just absorbing myself in service, I didn't have to walk down the street and, you know, go like this through, you know, every walk, or there's a woman, you know, stay away, demon, all this other stuff. It's just like, you just chant Hare Krishna, you absorb yourself in service. And then these things, they just don't become so much of a problem. I mean, the anattas are still there, but they're just getting less and less and less. And as we become more absorbed in devotional service, and Krishna, he puts us through tests. So I guess when we get put through the tests, that's kind of like when we're pulling out some pretty major weeds. But it's not that we're forced to be going around saying, oh God, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, you know, stay away, stay away. That's kind of what that lady was referring to. So basically what she was referring to, she was basically saying that, you know, I work with people, or I do things with people, but how do we do things in such a way so that we do not take on their influence? You know, so how can I do all these things yet be detached at the same time? But the way which she was presenting it was kind of like, you know, how do I get rid of these detachments? Kind of like in a traditional kind of, I assume like in a Buddhist sense, you know, you just kind of just like focusing your mind, a thing comes up, go away, you know, just, you know, in that kind of sense. Devotional service is a bit different. We focus ourselves upon doing our service, chanting attentively, and then naturally these disturbances, they go away because we just become absorbed in devotional service. For example, like I was using those two examples of attraction to the opposite sex, and like with like eating meat, if we have prasadam, then we naturally, it's very easy to give up that detachment. And through absorbing ourselves nicely in devotional service, and through being situated in a proper ashram, then these sexual urges, they can be controlled. So it's not that, you know, you feel like, you know, you really need to have your association of opposite sex, and then you get married, and then each morning you see your wife or your husband, and you just say, get away from me, you blood-sucking demon, don't come near me, you know, I don't want to. You know, it's just, you go through the proper training, and then when you're properly qualified, that's why grounds are called adhikari, they're eligible, they're qualified to actually associate with the opposite sex, yet not run around like a headless chicken, you know, just running around after their senses all the time. Otherwise, they're just no use to anybody. They're no use to their partner. So through properly practicing and through being situated in the proper ashram, then those desires, they can be properly controlled and properly purified. And we don't have to walk around like that lady was kind of pointing at, saying, no, I don't want, how do I, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah?
I think on that point, there's a difference between avoiding something,
right,
and removing something to achieve something else.
Right.
I think that the difference, like what you're saying with Buddhism, is a negation all the time.
Yes.
Because it's an obstacle in itself, but it doesn't lead anywhere else. But in Krishna consciousness, Sanatana Nivritti is removing something because it's in the way of something else.
Right.
My question is, if we can never perform devotional service perfectly, we're saying that we can always...
Materially.
Yeah,
in terms of like, we can perform it perfectly in consciousness.
It's always covered by some fault, as Krishna says.
Yeah.
So we can have the attitude of, well, I can always do it better. But at the same time, it seems the attitude or the mentality can arise of somewhat dejection and depression, I'm never going to be able to do this properly.
Hmm.
That can also come up in the consciousness, so how does one defeat that, or again become enthusiastic when it seems there's always going to be some fault?
Well, the perfection of that actual mentality is actually in humility, in terms of one actually never thinks that they'll be able to do things, you know, very nice, in terms of, I'm so fallen, I'm so lowly,
Because modern psychology would see that as a very bad thing for somebody to feel.
Yes.
Low self-esteem, they would call it.
Right.
So how in Krishna consciousness do we not feel that way, but how does it become transcendental? How does it become a symptom of devotion?
Read Chaitanya Charitamrita and read of the examples of the devotees. Read of Haridas Thakur, and just read of the examples of the Vaishnavas who have that humble service attitude, yet also the confidence and the faith in Krishna through that performing their service properly and through serving Vaishnavas properly, then the devotees will be satisfied. Because ultimately that's the goal of the devotees, to satisfy the Vaishnavas and to not really get that kind of satisfaction for themselves. I'm doing this so nicely, I'm satisfied that I'm doing this very nicely, and all the rest of it. The only way which you can do that is to actually read about the devotees. Like, for example, now we're reading about the gopis and their absorption. And I mean, like, if a materialist or a psychologist read that, then they just think that they're nuts, they're crazy. Or if a psychologist or someone who isn't so well versed in devotional principles, they read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then they'd say, look, these people are dejected. A lot of them are quite, they're putting themselves down a lot. But for one who has got the basics, ABCs of ABC understanding devotional service, when they hear of the pastimes of the devotees, there's two things. There's their humble service attitude, where they kind of see themselves as being quite lowly. Yet then there's also, you see their determination, which is the key thing. They're very determined to try and please Krishna, try and please the devotees more and more, which is the difference between a materialist and a spiritualist. The materialist thinks, I'm so lowly, I can't do this, and then they've got no determination, so they just throw in the towel and just sit around feeling all sorry for themselves. Whereas if you hear about these devotees, they think themselves very fallen and lowly, but they are actually doing very good things. And they are actually also very determined in their service towards Krishna. So the only real way to get over that hindrance is to just read the pastimes of those devotees. I don't know any other way myself, but that's what I do. I just read of the pastimes of those devotees and then hear their... Because this is the thing, it's like when you're reading these books, especially in particular, I'm starting to read Chaitanya Charitamrita again, and when you read it, I'm just like at the beginning part of it, but like with the especially like the Madhyalila, you're hearing about all these interactions with all the devotees and how they interact, and you're actually reading about what a devotee is and what a devotee says and how a devotee feels. So if you want to get an understanding of the proper emotions of the Vaishnava, then that's a very good book to read. And then these mundane things such as dejection and all the rest of it, you can actually see its proper use. Everything's got a use, even dejection, but that proper use in humility and devotional service. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Tomorrow or after 2 years, after 3 years, depends what we want to do and how we want to do it. I will
Yeah, this is what, just the verse I'm going to bring up now. I just can't remember the translate the. I can't remember. So those are constant devoted to the servant of love. They might carry what they lack and serve what they have. How does that go? What's that verse?
Serve what they have and carry what they lack.
Yeah. So basically, Christ. Yajana Pyro Pashati Desham. That's in the 9th chapter, isn't it? Yeah. I couldn't remember. I memorized it ages ago. But basically, what's the first part of the translation? So that's the most important aspect of our devotional service, is that we just serve Krishna with unalloyed devotion. That is false ego, yes.
I'm separate from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.